Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm Steve.
And I'm Ryan.
And welcome to another episode of The Last Podcast You'd Want. We got Ryan back on the show again.
I'm here.
So happy to have you on, Ryan. We both, we can either get into it now or get into it later. Do you want to talk about the main movie now or let's save it for the main event? You were talking about an A24 film, Problematica?
Problemista. I just saw it last week for my birthday. I turned 37, so I'm getting...
A row?
Yeah, 37 in a row.
Kevin Smith joke for every friend I have that turns 37. It's always in a row. Obviously, it's in a row. Obviously.
I went to go see Problemista, a new A24 movie by Julio Torres. You might know him from Los Espookies on Hulu. He used to be a writer for SNL. I really enjoy his comedy. Really out there kind of guy. He wrote some of my all-time favorite sketches of SNL. I don't know if you've seen the Mattel Wells for Sensitive Little Boys sketch.
Have not.
It's fantastic.
The last SNL sketch that I saw that was the new one probably was the Nicole Kidman AMC, which I will say, I don't know if you've been to AMC lately. They've shortened the commercial.
And it sucks. It sucks now.
Because every time I legitimately out loud go, heartbreak feels good in a place like this.
Yep.
Because they took half of it out.
Not as fun. I hate it. I'm really mad at AMC. The Wells for Sensitive Little Boys is some boys like to play with footballs. Some boys like to play with action figures. But some boys are just different. And for those boys, we have a well for sensitive little boys where they can trace their finger around the edges and ponder life. They can stare at their own reflection. I love Julio Torres. He wrote and directed this movie with Tilda Swinton. And if you've seen The Devil Wears Prada, Meryl Streep's, big role, imagine that, but unhinged and on cocaine, pretty much. It's just Tilda Swinton just chewing the scenery. Like every scene she's in, she's just off the fucking rails. One of the things that I loved is that she plays like an older lady who's just like lost her mind. And she always has her phone's flashlight on every time she's holding it. And she always has something else in her hand with her phone. So she always has something else. And then the light's always on and she's just like screaming at people and just being chaotic. It's a fantastic movie.
I will have to see if that's coming to my local theater. The last thing that I really watched, wife and I just watched MasterChef Junior. I was watching Oppenheimer, great film, before we were recording. And just today, don't judge me because I really like the film, but I was watching Ghostbusters 2.
Oh, yeah. No judgment.
Oh, cool. A lot of people, some people like to judge Ghostbusters 2. First movie I remember seeing in the theater, so it holds a special place. I sometimes will say I think it's better than the original, but that's okay.
I disagree, but...
Have you seen Frozen Empire?
I did. I saw Frozen Empire, thought it was fine. It was fun, it was stupid, there's too many characters.
It took this movie for me to realize that Ghostbuster films are 75% whatever and 25% villain.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's every Ghostbusters film.
Yeah. And I have a problem with, this bugged me about Ghostbusters Afterlife too, is why they felt like they had to do like the little marshmallow, the Stay Puffed marshmallow guys. I get it, they're cute, but the more you think about it, the less it makes any sense. Like these guys are just hanging out, nobody really cares, and they're just like, what are they? They're just mischievous spirits. Like I don't understand. I hope, I mean, they do kill each other, which is nice because I want them to die. So I like the main character. I forget her name. The girl who plays Egon's. Was that
Grace McKenzie? Grace.
Yeah, whatever her name is, she's fantastic. And you know, more lesbian ghost romance in movies. That's what I'm advocating for. More movies need to take the bold step to have a love affair with the ghost.
You know, other than the only other movie that I think I could think of is What Lies Beneath.
Nice.
Yeah. Suspicious suspect something. Who? Your wife.
I mean, original Ghostbusters.
Yeah, Dan Aykroyd gets a blowjob from a ghost.
Yeah, PG-13.
You could get away with that in the 80s. You could get a PJ from a ghost, and you could have gotten an OTPHJ from a ghost in a PG-13 film in the 80s. For those of you,
over the pants hand job.
It's an over the pants hand job. That is what an OTPHJ is. Yes, 100%. I used to host trivia, and there was a team that called themselves OTH or OTPHJ. And I just went up to them one day and I was like, I've got to know what does it stand? And they're like, over the pants hand job. And I'm just like, that is forever in my head.
That's great.
Yeah, no, I absolutely thoroughly enjoyed Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. But that is not what we are here to talk about.
Right. We're here to talk about my Taylor Swift The Eras Tour cup that I will be drinking out of this episode. That I got from a theater who was handing them out for free because they had too many.
Oh, really?
It's my favorite cup now. I don't even really like Taylor Swift all that much, but I like this cup.
My basic water cup is a Disney Tailspin cup. And I'll tell you what.
Love Tailspin.
I haven't watched Tailspin in probably 30 years.
Best like, theme song ever.
Like since it was on TV. But yeah, love Tailspin.
We're here to talk about one thing, and that's the devil.
That's right. We are here. When I went to go see the movie and they scanned my ticket, I looked at the man and I said, "Late Night with the Devil." Also, I'm seeing a movie.
Nice. This guy's cute though. Look at him. He's not scary.
No. Look at that smile. That's a big. No. Jack Nicholson, like him on cocaine and started. Yes. Boy, this film was, I think it's like an hour and a half, a little over hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And oh boy, I love the premise. So the premise of the film is it's unfound footage. I love unfound footage. Like mm-hmm. So good. It's an unfound footage of unedited footage with back behind the scenes that I love how all of the behind the scenes is in black and white of this TV show called Night Owls from the 1970s of a late night talk show host that was trying to compete against Carson
and failing.
And I have to say, with everything that this guy did to at least get the talk show, you figured he'd at least be able to beat Carson.
I mean, it was hard to beat, right? he's losing.
Amazing.
Losing game there. But yeah, the cool thing is like it's a cool concept where you're seeing the show as if you would have seen it with instead of commercial breaks, you're seeing behind the scenes footage. What's going on during the commercial breaks? I wish they would have committed more to that. It seems like, I don't know, near the end especially, like it kind of falls apart a bit. But yeah, it's really cool to see like just how they recreated it. Like I'm sure they used either old cameras or maybe they used like filters. But I was kind of hoping that they used like the same cameras that Eric Andre uses in the Eric Andre show. Like he just found some old cameras. And he used them for the show, and it's a beautiful effect. It feels exactly like how it did,
the way the movie was filmed, whether it is a filter or whether they did just find old movies that just shot the reel-to-reel 35mm, it's just got such a great feel for it. But we both said this to each other, like, it was extreme, but I wanted more.
I wanted more.
I would have loved more from the first act, the mind reader, I'll be honest, I really didn't care for the illusionist. Yeah. The antagonist of the film is, I guess, what you could call him.
Right. I
really wasn't a fan of him, but I would have liked more. And then what they gave us on the and her trainer was great. Mm-hmm. What I wish we had have gotten more of after that point is the ending of the film with everything that goes into the backstory. So folks, really what we're going to do is we're just going to be going no spoil. We're going to be going full spoilers. So if you haven't seen Late Night with the Devil, you want to see Late Night with the Devil and you don't want anything spoiled, please come back to the podcast, or, you know.
Tune in next time.
Next time on the last podcast you'd want. So the film starts with them talking about how he's part of this men's society club that's out in the forest, and it's very exclusive, and it's high-powered people, and there'd been governors and CEOs and presidents and all of this shit. And I wish we had gotten more of that. I wish we had gotten more of the story than just this random flashing between bits of what I think is supposed to be intended of him in hell.
I guess so, or just being shown hell by the devil or the demon or whatever.
Let's get into what you wanted, what you liked, and yeah. Get into everything, please.
Well, first I wanted to challenge you to say the main character's the main actor's name, because we practiced.
David.
Yes, his name is David. Desmalshian.
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 Desmalshian. I've been a for a while, but I never learned how to say his name. It's like Fememjenskin. I know I'm saying it wrong.
I remember first seeing him. I mean, the first time I remember like recognizing who he was, I was like, oh, that's the guy from The Dark Knight, the one that they think is the Joker, and he's just actually crazy. And then you start seeing him pop up in things. My favorite role of his by far is The Suicide Squad, directed by James Gunn, where he plays Polka Dot Man. Truly a fucking great performance, in my opinion. One of the best characters in the movie.
Absolutely one of the best characters in the movies. And yet another reason, and I know that's it's why you love it, but one of the reasons I hate that film is they give us really solid, great characters. And you take this guy of Polka Dot Man, who's supposed to be this villain, and he finally starts doing good, and he's got this great shining, like, I'm a fucking superhero! And then they fucking kill him.
Yeah, which is just, that's beautiful. That satisfies me. That pisses you off. I understand.
Because here's the thing, is I'd want more of that character. To start the film off, we've talked about this before, and you love it, but like, I love Captain Boomerang, and to literally start that film with just like Boomerang's death turned me off so fucking hard. And I sat there, I watched, it wasn't like Encanto where I was like, oh, I'm not digging this. And I just walked away and went and chilled in my office. I sat and watched all of the Suicide Squad, obviously, since I know Polka Dot Man dies. But it's, you know, give me more solid characters like that. Like, he's a solid actor. He gives solid performances. I really liked him in Dune 2.
Oh, yeah. I forgot he's in Dune.
Yeah, he was in. Yeah, dude, he was in Dune 2. Oppenheimer. He's solid. Oppenheimer. There's not a performance that he gives that's not a good performance.
Yeah, he's a great actor. He did really well in this. I thought he was perfectly cast as like a, he's definitely not Carson. He's trying to be like, you know, the late night guy, but he's really kind of out of his element. And you can see how he's just like desperately trying to find something that'll give him the edge. And, you know, even with the help or quote unquote from the shadow people, he's still kind of struggling to get there. And, you know, and he's still mourning the loss of his wife who died of cancer. They kind of show like they frame the movie in this like you're watching a documentary where there's an introduction, like, you know, they give you the buildup of the history of the show and everything. Kind of, I mean, it is an IFC film, correct?
Yeah, IFC and Shudder.
Yeah. And I don't know if you noticed this. In my theater, we started laughing because there were like 20 title cards before the movie started. Like all the production companies, there was there's a Family Guy joke where Peter is at the movie theater and he keeps thinking the title cards or the production cards are the movie. And he's like, oh, this is going to be good. This is this guy's sitting on the moon. Oh, shoot. It's like
Amblin. There were several title cards of the things to start up.
I looked at my friend and I was like, this is like Family Guy. There's so many production cards. But then they start the movie and it's like, they give you an overview of this guy and it's like, oh, a special presentation. You're seeing exactly what you would have seen on the, when it was broadcast with interspersed with behind the scenes. And I thought it was really effective. And the buildup was pretty good. And then the ending just didn't quite land it.
We push to the point of insanity, And then they give us an ending that I'm not even going to lie to you, Ryan. I don't understand.
Yeah. I mean, you know, his wife died of cancer and it's very heavily
hinted.
It's hinted that he was told he has to sacrifice something if he wants greatness. And so she's like saying, well, it was had to be me. I had to be the one you had to sacrifice to get this stuff. So it's just like, the demons or the devil or whatever it is just fucking with him and, you know, showing him all this stuff before basically like putting all the blame on him because it's somebody's got to fall for a bunch of people dying in a studio, you know, like, I mean, unless I kind of hoped he would die, but, you know, it is what it is.
I loved the point that they were at when the devil took over, and I felt heartbreak when the co-host to the show was like, I'm out of here,
and then, with the smallest cross you've ever seen, it's like this big, like the power of Christ compels you.
But someone that is religious will believe that a cross, no matter the size, will deter the devil and all of that.
It makes me think of This Is the End with what's his name?
Seth Rogen.
Well, Jonah Hill, when he gets possessed and Jay Baruchel's going, the power of Christ compels you. And he goes, does it, Jay? Does it really? It's not that compelling, Jay.
Yeah, the confusing part for me is everything goes insane, and then he goes into the hell scenes, and then it's him there with his dying wife, where they're basically suggesting, like, she got sick and died. See, and this is where I got confused, is did she die of the cancer, or did he actually end up sacrificing her? Because there's him with the knife and the thing, but then it goes to him in the studio, and it's him killing the girl. Right. And that's where the movie lost me. If there had been a little bit more explanation, if there had been a little bit more clarity in that last 5 minutes, instead of trying to give us a Shutter Island mysterious, what is what? I would have liked a little bit more.
I also had a problem with the visual effects in the movie. They clearly spent the most money on the final, like, appearance of the demon, you know, that whole thing was fantastic, but the other things really suffered for it. Like the first kind of weird thing they show is the mind reader guy who's like, is there anyone in the audience? Which, by the way, I went with my friend Liz, her name's Liz Peterson, and he starts saying, is there a Elizabeth Peterson? And I look over at her like,
he knows,
are you kidding me? Really, he's like looking for Elizabeth Peterson. And so he does his whole rigmarole, which is like, you know, he got fed answers beforehand, whatever. And then at the end, he actually starts to get a transmission of somebody in great pain. And then after that, he's just not doing so well. He starts getting worse and worse as the show goes on. He keeps like kind of clearing his throat, coughing. And then eventually he gets on his knees and, well, at first he like kind of pukes some black blood.
He spews out this black vile shit.
But then he like gets on his knees and he looks up at the camera and spews black at the camera before it cuts to commercial. And it was the worst visual effects I've seen in a long time.
It was like Toad eating a pigeon.
It was so bad. Like they should have done it practically. I wish they would have just had a freaking hose, you know, like even if they would have made it look terrible, a practical effect would have been so much more effective in that scene than like CGI goo coming at the screen.
I, once again, though, that's a character that I would have liked. I would have liked more with what they had. Mm-hmm. I would have liked there's so much more. I really enjoyed this film. This movie was really entertaining for me, even though it was completely batshit left field.
Did you catch the sightings of the ghost in the mirrors and stuff?
No.
So there's a couple of times in the movie. The first time I noticed it was when they were at commercial, and he turns and he's walking and there's a mirror behind him and you see a white face in the mirror. And then later on during the show part, they're talking about something and they're like, look away. And there's like the orb on the table, and inside the orb, there's like a white face, like screaming. And then somebody said at one point, I didn't see this, but like a hand on his shoulder was like in frame.
No, I didn't catch any of that.
Yeah, it might be worth watching again. I'm like, it comes out on like POV or something, like or is there VOD? I might watch it again
on streaming, because I'm not gonna lie, I paid to see this one because AMC did not get it. I had to go to the local Regal.
Oh yeah, no, I saw it at AMC at my AMC. I don't know, like there's like little things like that, like little details that I was like, okay, that's cool. It seems like they were really, you know, I think they were first time filmmakers, is that right? The people who made this movie.
I am unsure on that one. I can barely say the actor's last name.
Directors, it's two directors, Cameron Cairns. Oh, it's the guy who was the, is that the talk show host guy?
Announcer or the producer?
The announcer.
Was it Gabe?
Sorry, no, maybe it wasn't. Maybe I'm crazy.
Oh, you're probably crazy.
That's Reese Oteri. No, it's a different guy. It just seemed like it was a really cool concept. I was really psyched about it. And, you know, I gave it 3 stars. I didn't hate it. I thought there's a whole controversy online right now about the title cards they used were, they admit they were AI generated. They used some AI, what's that, Sojourn or whatever it's called, that like, is an AI image generator. So like the "we'll be right back" cards that come up, like you can look and like see the owl and it's got like 6 talons. It's, you know, those little like AI image artifacts in there. And I was like, you could have paid somebody $5 to make you that, dude. Like, seriously.
But you have to think back in the day, you know, they might have done something weird like that on a show. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It just sucks like that the filmmakers also,
I didn't notice it. Me, yeah, as someone that goes to the movies on a damn near weekly basis, I did not notice the 6 toes. I was thoroughly just into the movie. I'm also not gonna lie, I was probably a little bit more stoned than I should have been. I have an irrational fear, which I will not say on a recorded stance, that kept my mind partially distracted from what was going on while also completely watching the movie. Yeah. So I thoroughly, and like I said before in Time Again, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was very entertaining. It was very confusing for me a little bit at the end. But I'll wait for it to come out on streaming, and I'll definitely get it again. I'm not going to lie. If I can get it for the right price when it comes out on Vudu, I might just actually buy it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that seems like a good Halloween movie to put on, you know, have on in the background or something. Like, I wouldn't be mad about watching it again. And I'm scared of the devil. Like, I grew up Catholic. I'm scared of possessions and, you know, I grew up terrified of the devil. So movies like this are kind of hard for me to go watch. And this one at least was, I had a really good time. Like the possession stuff wasn't too scary. It was just kind of more like, you know, like body contortion and like deep voice kind of stuff. And then,
oh man. So, I mean, it was a classic. Let's talk about that possession scene real quick. Let's talk about that possession scene, and then let's talk about the hypnotic possession scene.
Mm-hmm.
I love the practical effects and makeup with when they do exorcisms or demonic possession. They can overdo it, and this one was nice. You had like the blister, you had the split lip, mm-hmm. you had the eyes, and you had a little something on the forehead, but her hair was covered enough that they didn't have to show a full face.
Yeah.
And, oh my God, with the voice change, and as someone that was raised Catholic, what are your thoughts, your feelings on that possession scene in comparison to what you've seen in other films? Have you seen The Pope's Exorcist?
I have not seen The Pope's Exorcist. I see very few possession films. I'll just say that much.
Well, it's on Netflix. I highly recommend it. And then listen to How Did This Get Made, talking about the Pope's Exorcist, because it's hilarious.
I did really enjoy The Conjuring. I think that had a good possession as well. But yeah, this one I thought it was very like minimalistic, which added to it. And the fact that I wish they wouldn't have had done the chair levitating thing. Like, I don't think that's really that, you know, in terms of realism, it doesn't matter, but I just like, they could have done more with less. And I did like the ending where she levitates and her head splits open and it's all light. Like, that was just really cool. But did they have to do it earlier with like her levitating in front of a whole studio audience?
Because that's classic possession. Instead of a bed, it was a chair.
Yeah, I guess so. I wish it would have escalated more after that. I wish it would have been like, you're still unsure at this point. But then they did the whole thing with the group possession where he possesses us, you know, which I thought was kind of cool.
So I will say, the whole time that knife was on the middle of the table between the two of them, the whole time I thought that she was going to stab him.
Yeah, me too.
The whole time I thought she was just going to be like, oh, and another thing, whap, bap, just, you know, knife up in the chest. When that illusionist was doing the group hypnotic and he's like, look into my watch, I looked at the watch on the screen for about 3 seconds and then went, oh no, if they're going to keep this watch, like I was like, no, no, no. Cause I can tell you right now, I am very susceptible to hypnotic.
Oh,
so,
like, wow.
Hypnotized. So I was 100% not going to be like, oh, I'm just going to stare at this watch as it like as he's speaking in a very soft, dull tone. Mm-hmm. But that whole scene, I have no problem with worms. I do not hate worms. I don't love worms. I'm the kind of person that if I'm walking down the street and I see a big worm out in the middle of the sidewalk flopping around, I will pick it up and I will throw it back in the grass.
Yeah.
And then I'll hand sanitize because worms are slimy.
Yes.
But how about that scene of the dude ripping open his... I legit thought that he was dead. I thought that it was a real like thing that was happening. The thing came out of his face and I'm like, I felt bad for that guy twice.
Mm-hmm. I felt really bad for, I mean, that part where he's opening up his guts and taking out the worms and stuff, that was, it was alarming, but I like didn't, I was the whole time I was like, well, this is clearly not real. It's clearly like hypnotized everybody. So it wasn't very tense for me. The part that was tense for
what's for me,
for me was when shit hits the fan and her caretaker is trying to help, and suddenly her like necklace lifts her up and she's sitting there like, you know, strangling, and that was, I felt really bad for her because she,
her throat splits open.
Yeah, because she had nothing but good intentions, you know. She was trying to help and she really cared about her and was trying to help with all that stuff. So, you know, it is what it is, like, but it was really sad. One thing that took me out of it, and this always happens with these unfound footage kind of movies, is that the cameras continue rolling when shit goes to hell, literally in this case. People are being, you know, thrown up and electrocuted and all hell's breaking loose, and the cameras are still like capturing it. Like there's somebody there behind the camera. Like, dude, all those people would run.
But that final shot where it's just him in the studio and it's like the camera there.
Yeah.
I like that because then it shows that it's like the camera's still rolling.
Yeah.
But no, I feel you on that. Like no one is going to be like, oh, look at the devil. Look at this. Look at that. I should.
Whoa.
I'm getting paid union pricing.
Right. Yeah, I'm risking my life for this job. Yeah, so that kind of took me out of the end there, especially, yeah, like, what are we supposed to be seeing with his vision? Like, if we're watching found footage, then why is that on the found footage? Why are we seeing it? Like, it seems like they stopped caring about their own rules at the end. So, yeah.
You do have a little bit of a point there that I didn't even think of. But then again, it is a very weird, unexplained, why are we seeing this? The devil gives us a good, like, oh, your friend's in the woods, like, you know what's going on. And that's like, the devil obviously knows what's going on because he's the one that's being prayed to and the sacrifices are being made. And he's the one that's quote unquote pulling the strings for all of them with his, you know, demonic power. No, I didn't even think about that.
Like, why are we seeing it?
But no, I'll have to check it out when it comes back out for all the ghostly shit for the people in the mirror and all of that. Yeah. As we come to a close, you recommend people, if they have the chance to see it in the theater, see it in the theater, or wait till it comes at home?
I'm torn on that one. There weren't that many people in my theater. But I am glad that I saw it in theaters. So if you get a chance, then go. I doubt that it's really playing in that many theaters. So most people are probably going to watch this on video on demand. But yeah, check it out. It's a fun time, especially if you are afraid of demons and possessions.
Absolutely. And as we come to a close, any words of inspiration or mantras or anything of positivity you'd like to leave with the listeners?
Watch Problemista. I think people will like it. A lot of people haven't heard of it. I know you hadn't heard of it. I love supporting independent movies. And I remember seeing, I saw the Talking Heads movie, Stop Making Sense, twice in theaters, and Problemista, I think, showed a preview during that time, and I was like, I gotta watch this because I think A24 just puts a lot of their trailers before their movies. Watch movies, man. I love Dune Part Two. I loved Dream Scenario was great. I don't know if you watched Dream Scenario. I just saw recently this 1985 movie, I think, called Dangerous Liaisons. Have you seen that?
Oh yeah, Michelle Pfeiffer and
Glenn Close,
John Malkovich.
I'd never seen, and a young Uma Thurman too, and yeah. Keanu Reeves. I'd never seen it before, and I start watching this. I'm like, oh, this is Cruel Intentions, isn't it? Like, yeah, it is.
No, it's Cruel Intentions. Cruel Intentions is Dangerous Liaisons.
Right. But we watched it for my movie club, and I was like, oh, this is great. I don't really like period pieces at all. I don't like high dramas, and I had a great time with that one because it's all people backstabbing each other and, you know, just awful people.
I will give you a recommendation of a completely opposite film that you haven't seen this year yet. It's on Amazon Prime, Ricky Stenicki.
I almost watched that yesterday, and instead I watched Invincible, because the second part of season two is out on Amazon Prime right now, and I love Invincible.
Sure, sure.
I will watch
Ricky Stenicki. I highly recommend Ricky Stenicki.
That's where they have a friend they made up, right, a long time ago, and now they have to, like, come up with a friend.
Yes. Yeah. And I'll be honest, I didn't even know that much. All I knew about the film is it was Zac Efron and John Cena, and that nice. Was enough for me.
Yeah. What about Roadhouse? Did you see Roadhouse?
I just watched Roadhouse. I don't think they needed to call that movie Roadhouse.
They could have just called it anything else.
It could have been anything, but no, thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. Conor McGregor was just a hoot and a holler with the shit that he was doing.
Now, the girl in that movie is Daniela Melchior, who was Ratcatcher 2 in The Suicide Squad. So we came full circle there.
There we go.
I'm surprised we didn't play our game, our 7 degrees game.
So I mean, if you want to leave them with that, we can leave them with that. If you want, to name one, and then I'll name one. We'll do it next time.
We'll do it next time.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been another episode of The Last Podcast You'd Want. And until next time, tip the veal, try the staff, and we'll see you then. Hail Satan!